You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. A week ago, Governor Gavin Newsom unveiled the 6 criteria that must be met before we can all return to life as we knew it before shelter in place. That includes things like closely monitoring communities for the coronavirus, tracking down cases and isolating people who have it, also building capacity in local hospitals to handle sudden surges. One thing health authorities are figuring out is if infection rates start to climb again, what data should be used to determine when to step up social distancing measures. For answers, I called up Dr. George Rutherford. He's a professor of epidemiology at UCSF and director of their prevention and public health group.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's not the world's most salubrious phrase. What it refers to is to think of a bell-shaped curve that goes up and down very quickly. That represents the number of cases of COVID-19 that are in a population, say in a city. Then you draw across as a horizontal bar how many beds you have available in your hospitals and how many ICU beds you have available in your hospitals. You do some math to try and extrapolate from the numbers of cases to the numbers of people who need to be hospitalized and need to be in ICUs. And then you see how many, what your shortfalls are going to be in ICU capacity and in bed capacity, which is what's going on in New York and has gone on in Italy and Spain and China before that. Bending the curve means changing the height of the curve and the width of the curve. Now, for everybody who's taken calculus, you'll recognize this as a calculus problem, but it's not the same area under the curve. It's not the same number of cases at the end of the day. It's fewer cases, and it's spread out over a much longer period. And that's what we've attempted to do here in San Francisco and the Bay Area and California in general. If you look at the curves of the numbers of cases per day, it looks pretty flat. It looks like a sawtooth. If you put it up on the right scale, relative to, say, New York or Los Angeles or other places, it looks totally flat. And that's what it means. It's a very, it's like a low hill.
We're in a newsroom, and I think a lot of newsrooms have been trying to figure out, you know, what do we need to be tracking? So is it fatality rates, right? Or is it the number of people in the hospital?
Well, I mean, obviously the bottom line is fatalities, right? We're trying to avoid deaths. That's what this exercise is all about, is avoiding deaths. And we've done a remarkably good job of it. The original sets of projections that were that got President Trump's attention and Prime Minister Johnson's attention in the United Kingdom came from a very accomplished research group at Imperial College in London that predicted there'd be 2.2 million deaths in the United States if we didn't do anything. 2.2 million deaths in the United States equals something like 44,500 in the 6-county Bay Area.
Right. San Francisco announced a new program, a contact tracing program, that is this innovative program, and it's supposed to strengthen the response to coronavirus. Can you talk about that?
Of course. So contact tracing is a sort of tried and true public health a disease control approach, and it consists of when somebody's diagnosed with a communicable disease, someone from the health department talks to them, or occasionally it's their own doctor who talks to them, and says, okay, this is the disease you have. We know you were probably infected during this period of time, and we know you are probably capable of transmitting disease to others during this period of time. So for coronavirus, those are very short windows. It's like one day, 5 days before symptom onset for getting it, and it's a couple of days before symptom onset for transmitting it up until the time of diagnosis and isolation. Mm-hmm. So we're asking for fairly narrow periods of time. And the idea is that you would find the people with whom they were in contact, which is usually housemates or people in their families, and talk to them to find out how close they were in contact. And then also to find out whether they have symptoms or not. If there's symptoms, they get prioritized for testing. We'd move, you know, and then if they were infected, they'd go into isolation. If they were not infected, they would go into quarantine with the assumption that they might develop infection somewhere down the line.
So that's the people immediately in contact with the person. So what,
correct.
Then how far do you go with that?
It's just the people with whom they're in immediate contact. Now, what does immediate contact mean at the supermarket?
Uh-huh.
Right? Does it mean you're standing behind them in line? Does it mean you're, you know, holding the same grapefruits and sniffing them? You know, what exactly does it mean? Which is why we want people to, you know, sort of, you know, shelter in place as much as possible. Their different organizations have different definitions. CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, talks about having being within 6 feet of another person for more than 10 minutes. That's kind of a definition of close contact.
Right.
And so if we could identify those people, we would ask them to be, you know, we would interview them about symptoms and possibly ask them to get tested.
And we're relying on people's memories here. We're not going to go all, you know, espionage on anybody, right? it's not. Right.
Well, yeah, this is, yeah, I mean, yeah, but, you know, people who have cell phones, you can go look at their cell phone, you can, you know, query their cell phones about where exactly the cell phone's been within like a block for the last 5 days.
Is that something that might happen? People giving consent for that?
Yeah, obviously you'd have to do it with somebody's consent. But if they couldn't remember or they're having a hard time remembering, you could say, okay, well, here we can look at your phone and, you know, dot, 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 dot. Come up with a little bit tighter coordinates of where they were in time and space.
And so, you know, for a lot of us are taking this very seriously and listening to the directives and doing what we're supposed to be doing. And a lot of us, I mean, aren't. One thing that's been interesting is talking about enforcement. And I know our sheriff's departments have said, you know, we're going to be lenient. What do you think about the kind of enforcement mechanisms and how they should be, like what should be happening, especially for quarantining suspected cases of the coronavirus?
Yeah, I mean, those are legal health officers' orders for quarantine and isolation and can actually be enforced. You know, people who are supposed to be sheltering at home or out wandering around, screwing around, you know, they're not supposed to be doing that. The sheriffs and the police departments can give out tickets for that, and they have. I think what you'll see is as we come away from shelter in place to something more open, if there's a requirement to wear masks, and which I suspect there will be, that they'll be giving out tickets for people not wearing masks.
Like in New York, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, this is just reading crystal balls. I don't have any primary knowledge of this, but I could see something like that happening.
And I mean, you talked about crystal balls. Is a lot of this about crystal balls for even you, the kind of the scientist, the epidemiologist? Do you feel like that sometimes?
Nah, I know exactly what's going to happen in the future. That's why as soon as this is over, I'm going to Las Vegas and make a fortune.
I think a lot of people are looking to you and, you know, just like wanting the answers. And
No kidding. I hadn't noticed.
What are you experiencing as an epidemiologist right now?
I mean, you know, we can estimate with degrees of certainty how things will play out. And if you want to talk about them qualitatively, as opposed to, you know, there'll be 35 cases on the, you know, 3rd of May. I think what we'll be seeing is a gradual diminution in the number of new cases, a gradual diminution of the number of people in the hospitals, a gradual diminution of the number of people who die from this infection into the early summer. As we come out of shelter in place, which I presume just based on Governor Newsom's comments, maybe sooner than that, like sometime in May, this is total guesswork, right? We'll move away from shelter in place slowly. And then people will disperse for the summer, as people always disperse for the summer. And then we come back to the school. We'll probably see small outbreaks, which is the whole point of contact tracing and disease investigation, is to get on those and, get on those and make sure there's nothing bad happening, and to get people isolated and quarantined who are infected or who have been closely monitored and quarantined. So that's how I see it playing out.
And finally, do you think we've changed forever? Do you think this, when we do come back, are we ever going to go back to our previous ways and our normal ways of life? I'm just saying this because I remember after the drought, the California drought, when we were told not to, not to water our lawns or not to fill our tubs. I've noticed that the houses built after that were built with the showers, not the tubs.
This is exactly the analogy I use all the time. My children never flush toilets so people could wash cars in Los Angeles twice a day. We had to send the water southward for important uses. I think recycling is another example, right? That's really changed. Mm. Now, you and your listeners may be far too young to remember the world before recycling. Mm. But even 20 years ago, the thought of sort of separating garbage and separating trash into things that were recyclable and things that were not recyclable and having curbside recycling was sort of wasn't quite there yet. And we've learned those lessons as well. Mm-hmm. But I think the water rationing analogy is really quite apt. And I suspect we'll see some carryover of this. I think just people standing at the bar 5 deep on Friday afternoon, or Saturday evening I think that's going to take a long time for people to cozy up to that as a way of social intercourse.
What would you like folks to be thinking about, talking about right now, priority-wise?
I think the priority for people is to stay the course. This has worked well. All we need is a couple of big outbreaks in homeless shelters or another one in a homeless shelter or a nursing home, and it just makes all these numbers blow up and things will look bad again. But, we want people to stay the course. We want them to shelter in place. We don't want them going around and, sort of seeing all their friends surreptitiously on the side. We are working as hard as we can to develop, to suppress viral transmission. And to be able to prove that we've suppressed viral transmission through a bunch of different studies that we're conducting. If you get called by a contact tracer, please cooperate with them. It's not about you, and it's really about kind of the greater societal benefit. We want it to be voluntary, but if we think somebody's is exposing a lot of people, it can become mandatory. But that's not the way things get done very efficiently in San Francisco. So we want people to cooperate with us, please.
How are you doing, Dr. Rutherford?
Well, I told my wife today that I wanted to pack our bags and move to a planet that had 26 hours in the day. Because that's about what I need if I'm going to get 2 hours of sleep a night. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rutherford, for your time.
Take care, guys.
Dr. George Rutherford is a professor of epidemiology at UCSF and director of their Prevention and Public Health Group. And you can hear an extended version of my conversation with him online at kalw.org.